Hello, everybody, and welcome to Throwlers. I'm joined, as always, with Chris Reynolds. How you doing, Chris?
Very well, Alan. Back to our normal programming. It feels a little while since we've done a traditional Wednesday episode.
Yeah, probably. It's hard to keep track, but we had a hectic whirlwind where we did like four in a week, and then we might have skipped a week, and then, yeah, had the special one for Nationals, and, yeah, I don't know. It's all happening.
Yeah, pretty good. Pretty good. Work's mental at the moment. Like, you start to think there's light at the end of the tunnel as you, you know, get to this Christmas period. But it's just in my role at the moment, it's just that's where my voice has gone. I just can't. I'm just, yeah, constantly in and out of meetings. Just work. Like, loads of late nights. So, again, I had another function tonight. I've got another function tomorrow night. So just like massive, like 14-hour days, like multiples in a week. It's mental. What about yourself?
Not as bad as that. So I had Monday off coming back from Nationals. That was nice. So I'm already 2 days in and halfway through my week. So not too bad. Just a couple more to go and I got a nice weekend of zero disc golf, I think. Might never play disc golf again, but at least this weekend.
Nice.
That's it. Last weekend there was some big stuff on the line though, so we'll have a chat about that first. I think all year builds up to this, and really didn't disappoint. It came down right to the nitty gritty. I speak, of course, of the final Melbourne Disc Golf Club social day and the winner of season two. So that's where all eyes were this weekend. And I think you made it out, right, to Werribee?
I did. I had to see it firsthand. Like, as you said, like, when I noticed pretty early on in the piece that there was going to be a calendar clash with another event, you know, I just had to give, this had to get right away. And I had to see it firsthand unfold. A few players in the mix, and boy, was it a really close result.
Yeah, it was. I'm having a look at it now. I know you were there to maybe spoil a specific person's party. I know that going into this event, Penn had a narrow lead off Aiden, and I think Aiden had the biggest ability to jump. So it was always going to be tough sledding for Penn. A win over him probably would get it done, but any sort of loss might have been a bit squirrely. Is that where we were at?
Yeah, real squirrely. And so any sort of loss looked like it would have been a loss to Penn. But then with a few other players signing up and the way the point system works within metrics, he did have a little bit of breathing room, but he couldn't really let anyone score between him and Aiden. As long as no one scored between him and Aiden, he was still within a shot if a few other things went his way.
There you go. And if Aiden took a win, that would probably be seal the deal though, right?
I had to. I have to. You know, I've been sleeping really well this week, and it's probably because I'm telling myself that if Aiden had a won, he would have won the season.
We're giving a bit of away the goose here. Yeah, I'm just trying to be a little coy, but I see your name at neg 10. Two strokes clear of Aiden Howard with a bogey as well to your name. Clean sheet for Aiden. So your top end potential obviously far exceeds his. And then right below that, we've got Juan Rader and Penn Lu tied at neg 6. How'd you feel out there?
Yeah, really good. Really good. Got to play on Aiden's card, which was a lot of fun. And there was a lot of talk pre-round about exactly the situation and what was going on. And Penn sidled on over to me on his one wheel saying, "Hey, you've called out on the podcast that you're here to screw someone over. But the way I've done the maths, the only person you can screw over is me." And before the round started, I was like, "Nah, Penn, here's what I'm thinking. If I win and lessen the points that Aiden's allowed to able to grab, that gives you a better chance at winning." And he's like, "Oh, yeah." And I was like, "So just leave it with me." And, 100% from C1, All over the basket from C22, end up cashing a good like 16 meter one. Big putt at Aiden on so many holes. And look, it felt good. It felt good.
Well, we might focus on this a little bit now. It seems rude to go through the whole board and then come back to the tippy top. We'll have a look at the winners now and then finish it off. But if we look at the Season 2 Social Day leaderboard after the final event is won and done, we still see Penlu's name on top with Aiden there in second. And what is the differential between first and second place there, Chris?
It's 0.24. Less than a point in it. 0.24.
I have not done the maths on this completely yet, but just what it looks like off the top of my head. You get the 100 points for the win. Aiden got 97.14, so almost a full three for that. And then the next step down to Penn looks like it is more than three.
No, 94.29, also about three.
Okay, or well, maybe it wouldn't have worked. I was trying to figure out if your 100 was very crucial. Like if Aiden got the 100 and Penn got the 97.14, would we be having a very different conversation? But we'll just go with it. We did.
Yeah, well, even if Aiden had a tied me, or if Aiden had a beat me by a stroke, then Penn's dead in the water.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, there's a few other ways that Penn is dead in the water, but not the way it played out.
Not the way it played out. So, a huge result for Penn. I think he might be the only non-Ryan Deer that's won this thing. Am I crazy in saying that?
In the recent history, yes.
Yeah, I don't.
He is the only non-Ryan Deer that's won this thing.
I think they've only split it into two. This is year two, maybe, right? And I think we've got three Ryan Deers and now a Penn Lou.
Why not, I reckon.
Why not? Pretty exclusive company, so pretty cool by him. He has 1, 2, 3 wins, and then a few others there in the high 90s, so he's got to be sitting in that sort of second, third category. Good consistent golf, and Aiden also with 3 wins, very, very similar. Just would have been Penn just doing a little bit more on days where there was a little bit more people, I would say.
Yeah.
We'll give a big shout out to Juan Rader, Tim Ware, Doug Adams, Mike van der Linden, Ryan Deer, Ville, Chris Scott, and Aaron Picanti as the top 10 for the season. So, a lot of people showing up to a lot of events and getting in some good scores and taking down some big competition. So, pretty exciting to see. That reminds me, I still got to register for the
Champs.
Whoa, before that gets a little too late.
Yep.
Have you had anything more for the leaderboard?
Not from the leaderboard, but we need to cycle back to the social day because something big happened on hole 8.
What was that?
That is Mr. Matt Mutter with the hole in one.
Big.
Massive. Hole 8 is a good ace, and we have it on account that he threw the straight line. When the text came through on the chat, I was picturing hole 7, and I was like, yeah, cool, that's a good little ace. It's been ace before. But hole 8's a good get, Matt. Well done. Not in the ace spot.
No good. Oh, that's, you hate to say it.
You do.
I think I've been roped into taking over A-spot duties next season too, so that'll be pretty prevalent. I'll have a little bit more information of updated prices and things like that. Get on it. You never know. Even you could ace.
That's true.
Any other names standing out? Just a lot of that top leaderboard doing work in the top 10, basically.
Yeah, absolutely. Nothing else really jumping off the page. It was, good conditions for scoring. Beautiful day out in Werribee. At Brave, it was you guys were obviously scorching up at Nationals, but it was a hot day down here on Saturday, 36 degrees. So Most people opted for the 8 a.m. round, but a brave card of four went out for the 10:30 round, and I'm sure they lost some fluids.
I'm sure. Just have a look at the handicap leaderboard, and Marcus Davies on top, Paul Rogers, and then Chris Ronalds there in third place. Look at you getting on the top of the handicap.
I know, right? It did not rate well, though. It only rated like 960.
Oh,
it felt like it was like felt way better. That's the metric system sometimes lets you down. So, yeah, and I feel like me being that high in the handicap kind of shows that, yeah, like I've probably played above myself, but like significantly, but still it was only good enough for a 960 rating.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
The other end, we've got David Wood, Wayne Hood, and Albie Cunningham, all disappointing. Tim Ware pretty close to there as well, so I better give him a good shout out because we always like that. All right, let's maybe have a look at Nationals. We spent most of the last pod talking about it. I gave you a bit of a preview, I think. Told you how shit I was. I said that the course was just okay. I think the more I played it, the more I liked it. It's still not okay. like I'll probably never go back to Molong. Just probably won't happen. And if I really liked it, you'd make that effort. But I did like it the more I played it. I must say that. Still the things I said are all applicable, but I felt like I enjoyed it a bit more. And, I think if you were to play it a lot, you would find that there's plenty of attackable stuff and it's all good. Like I end up getting a bunch of birdies on one of the rounds. If I had a look at MPO, you'd see Thomas Gilbert birdied all but three of the holes. Like there's stuff out there that could be done. So I don't think I was harsh on the course at all, but I think it was more enjoyable in the end than at the start.
Nice. I'm happy to hear that. I mean, I got to watch a bit of live coverage and, it's hard to tell. And you could definitely tell that, I hope Park Media don't mind me saying this, but there was definitely some like catch cam placements where they were swinging the catch cam a lot. And because they were swinging the catch cam a lot, the MPOs, it was really hard to like kind of get a grasp of like how far they'd actually thrown. It almost felt like they threw twice the distance of where the catch cam was stood on some holes. And so I was just like, where was catch cam there? Like, how far is this hole? Like, it was on a few holes, it's kind of hard to get a feel for how long some of them were.
Yeah, gotcha.
Yeah.
Did you get the hole 14 or something it was? The par 5? Did you see much of that with the out of bounds left and right? And Thomas Gilbert throws the roller?
Yeah, I saw that one live.
Yeah, so that whole, I don't know, that the hole took huge numbers for a lot of people. I took a huge number on it, and a big number in another round. But it's, I don't know, like I still, yeah, it's one of those ones that did grow on me, but it's still not, it's pretty jank, I must admit. It's still a really narrow fairway, but just shouldn't be thrown out of bounds as much as I did, sort of thing, and no one should. That was a bit rough. The out of bounds on 17 we'll get to as well. that kind of became a big factor in the end. But yeah, I don't know. Yeah. I played all right. There was opportunities on a lot of holes for big numbers, and you saw plenty of it.
Yeah.
We'll have a look at some of the scores. So we'll start with the MA40 guys. Oh my god, why won't it load it up? Load full scores. Well, that's annoying. I can't seem to get. Oh, here it goes. Yeah,
I've got him in front of me. Go for it. Runaway victory from the Brit. We spoke about it when we checked in. I think he was in the mix after round one. T3 after round one. Got to the lead, four-shot lead after the second round, and then built that out to a 12-shot victory in the end for Adam Keane. A lot tighter, everywhere else down the leaderboard, with a tie for second and only two shots back for Lee Baker in fourth.
Yeah, a final round even for Adam is massive. That was huge. Power of work by Al Don and Tanga Whiteford to get back in. Plus sixes for them was excellent. You could see the old boys had had enough. A lot of these scores from fourth on down, their final round is a good, good chunk of their overall score.
If
I said do the maths, I think it would average in at about 40% of what their final over par total was for a lot of these things. So, course was playing tough and was playing real hot. And you saw the people that could handle it finally start moving their way back up to the top. So good to see Al Don get into second, last year's winner. He started pretty rough. It would have been, would have been sad to see him finish in 15th where he started. So good to see the comeback there.
Yeah, well done. Quick shout out to a couple of listeners, Taryn Anderson. Finished T14th along with the bloke that had a hitchhike there, Anthony Magan. And you've also got the likes of Terry Bowen, passionate listener, hates the tee off Terry Bowen, finishing in T26 and playing the event above his rating. So hanging out with the young whippersnappers, Terry, for the event, and played above his rating. So well done, Terry.
Beautiful. I think Taryn and Tony potentially scored the same each round.
I don't think so, because I feel like, Anthony Magan, nah, they didn't.
Oh, nah, they just played with each other each round, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. All right, yeah. All good. all right, we'll go FA1, and this was not close at all. Final round plus 10 is very good golf there by Australian representative Kirsten Murray. Just goes to show that her top end potential is well and truly there and just way too good. Just almost doubling or halving the score of local Kyrie Cooper-Kane and Ockers. So couldn't be stopped.
Yeah, good selection by the selection committee there. Finishing with a 9-11 round on a bomber course. Yeah, her top end really is there, and we hope she goes from strength to strength.
Birdie-free weekend for the whole FA1 division. Tough. It's a tough course.
It's a tough course.
I thought there was some out there for him, but guess they just didn't find him.
Yeah.
In MA1, I was not a factor. T21st, a plus 12, a plus 11, and a plus 10 technically got better each day, but it didn't really feel like it. Day two was wild, man. Hole one just kills me. It's not that hard. First time I played it, I parred it, and then I just can't stop aiding it. Did you see it? Did you see much of it on the footage?
Yeah, I did. Triple eights. Just got to throw it in bounds, throw it up towards the Mando. Maybe you lane up again on your third. I mean, the MPO boys weren't, but maybe I imagine you are, because you'd get yourself in some funny spots. But then shoot through and get your par. Like, once you're at the Mando, the basket's not far away.
Yep, that's exactly it. That's exactly how you play it. And you should just get a five. But if you have a look at the MA1 division, just barely a five to be found.
Is it OB off the tee, or is it like missing the Mando? What's going on?
It's not so much missing the Mando. It's OB's second shot, most likely.
Yeah. Okay, yeah.
A lot of the MA1 dudes, so I just go straight up and avoid the OB right corner. A lot of the MA1 dudes are trying to hyzer around it, and so some just don't make it there. But then the ones who go straight like I did, first day I went OB straight golf green too far. Second day I was too short and I was like, oh, it's fine. I'll just Tommy over the trees over the corner. And it just didn't Tommy. So I just went up, moved up about 10 meters to the out of bounds there. I'm like, sick. Day three, I was so close to the ideal spot. And I just needed to throw like a forehand sort of hyzer, just left enough. And I didn't throw it left enough. So it came back to out of bounds. And then it's low ceiling. Like, even if you do get that next shot in, it's low ceiling going to that Mando. So a lot of people just throw it low. And then that can kind of eat a stroke. And then there's trees past the Mandos that are hard to get by. So if you're not in the Mando, you can't, it's hard to get to the basket. So then you can sort of, even if you get through, you hit a tree, upshot. They just come. Like, before you know it, you're like, yeah, day three, I was like, oh, well, at least I'm putting for seven here. But it was one of, if not the only C1 putt I missed for the weekend. And I was like, oh, cool, another eight. it's just, yeah, a lot of people just throwing out of bounds everywhere. Off tee, off second shot, off third shot. Throwing ground, like, just, yeah. Throwing it at about 30 meters when they're trying to throw it 130 meters. It just killed. Like, final day, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 pars in a field of 42.
Yeah.
In the MA1 division. Like, I don't know, man. But it's not that hard. I stand by it. And I still think it's a really good hole. But, yeah, after that, on day two, I kind of went ham. Oh, I still stuffed up hole two, but... and I rattling off a turkey on, like, the three of the easier holes in a row, followed that up by a double bogey, and got a big birdie on a big forehand hole, big forehand guy. Looking all right, and then, yes, huge number on that fucking par five, and it all went to water from there. And then clutched up and hit a C2 putt on hole 18. Did not make the island, still got the birdie.
Big.
Big. Five birdies, which was as good as anyone in my division did all weekend. And I finished with a plus 11 that day.
give us your gold brown. Give us your golden brown.
Oh, I don't know. Off the top of my head, I don't know. And they weren't even good. Like, my gold round was only like maybe neg two or something, because I took 8 every round on fucking hole one.
I'm aware.
And I never parred a hole two. Never parred, I want to say, hole six. And I never parred hole 14. God, I'm fucking suck, man. I had bogey or worse in my gold round in 4 or 5 holes.
Yeah.
So yeah, maybe I didn't. Maybe I think my maybe that must be it. Then my gold round was neg one, maybe even potentially. Maybe even plus one. I don't know. It sucked. Anyway. Yeah, just threw it out of bounds too much. That's enough about me. It was not a factor. But the cheating MPO guy, Liam Brunelli Brondex, was. And he was just too consistent. Second place with a plus one after round one. A plus two round two got him into first. And then a plus four blowout round in... round three was just still had him a 3-stroke victory. So well done there, Liam. This is the second year in a row that a player who has played MPO all year has won the MA1 Nationals. they are well within their rights to. I keep encouraging you to come play with me, but I still feel like it's important for me to point that out.
No, it's very important for you to point that out.
Cade Ashton, who's been red hot form after the big win of the Eruption, there in second. And Bryce Winchester, partner of FA1 winner, Kirsten, just very solid as well. So he got himself third, and then it really dropped off. I'm not just saying that because Ed was in fourth, a very good event by Ed. But it was pretty tight between the top three and then 8 strokes between third and fourth, and then we started to drip feed all the way down from there.
Yeah. 9:30 was good enough. Good enough to get fourth.
Yeah, which, probably shouldn't be. Just probably shouldn't be. I did speak about this being one of the weakest fields I'd ever seen, even though it had like 100 people in it. But yeah, can only beat the people in front of you. A 9.63 event. That's, you know, it's probably not normally enough to win nationals in MA1, but it's still a good event. And yeah, well done, Liam.
Well done, Liam.
What do we got in MP40?
MP40 was ring-a-ding-ding out of the gate. So it was, you know, one shot separating the podium after round one, and then only two shots separating the podium after round two. So going into the final day, we were obviously rooting for our guy Daz to go ahead and get those chocolates. But Michael Yu had other ideas and shot a 1,007 rated neg 3 to finish the event under the card at neg 2 and win by a 7 strokes. Mind the gap.
I'm Ricky Wysocki and you're listening to the Throwers Podcast.
So my microphone cut out and did not record the rest of the pod. So I'm just going to have to do a little bit of solo work here, try to salvage what we had. It's now Thursday night because I could not be bothered doing that on Wednesday night. Chris, we got up to MP40. Chris had mentioned how Michael Yu was just too good. And man, was he. I went and caddied for Dazza after my round was done, and I got to see the man in action. He's not flawless, but he doesn't really make mistakes, and when he does, they don't hurt him. He finds a way to putt his way out of it, or excellent upshot out of it. He birdied three of the four final holes to have put together an incredible final round, and it went from sort of being there or thereabouts to just way, way ahead of the competition. So yeah, that's what clean golf and a wicked sidearm will do, is get you a big fat win and a big fat payday in MP40. And yeah, Finney there in second, Ryan Johnson and Daz tied for third. Both had a chance to sneak outright third on hole 17, and both stuffed it up by throwing out of bounds, letting Finney cruise his way into second. So but yeah, good show on there by Dazza, good bit of cash, and yeah, Ryan Johnson's been the class MP40 for a little while now, so being up with him is some good going. In the FBO, I got the pleasure of watching these ladies go every single morning. It was great, a lot of fun had on the live chat as well, stirring up the Park boys as well as stirring up some randoms, but Haas was just too good. So very, very good disc golf, +8, +10 and +8. That's getting it done, and Peyton and Gina just could not keep up with what Haas was doing. So birdies being a pretty big separator for Haas. I think Peyton might have had one or two, but Haas had five or six or something throughout the weekend, and that was just enough to put it really out of reach. Otherwise, it could have been a little squirrely down the end. But yeah, Haas is too good. Great to watch. Love seeing that every morning. And yeah, well done, Haas, the FBO Australian National Champion. And in the NPO, I'm sure everybody has seen it by now, so I won't go into too crazy detail, but Dave Perry was very good from the start, and always in the mix. Thomas Gilbert had the blistering first round and then really chilled out after that. Blake and Luke were always in it. Jade Brady came firing late, but it really ended up being a two-horse race. It came down to hole 17. Dave Perry has a stroke on Gilbert, and Gilbert finally really, really dialed his roller in. So round one, I think he still went way down there, but it burned it over to the right. Round two, he got it too straight, and he goes OB long. And this is ridiculous. This is 200-meter rollers. Huge sky, and he's just thrown over a wall of trees to land on a nice wide-open fairway. And then in round three, he gets the cut just perfect. so that it holds straight and then still finishes left towards the basket, which is just outrageous. Absolutely outrageous. Unfortunately for him, though, he went still went too long, so he went out of bounds. It should have been putting for Eagle because that OB is just way, way too close to the basket. But fortunate for Australia and for Dave Perry, he did go out of bounds in the circle, so he would have had himself a birdie putt from about 6-7 meters, I think. Meanwhile, next shot, Dave, who put it to about 30 meters last time, just an insanely good air shot in round two, tries the same thing again, but oh man, I was watching it on the iPad. We end up maybe pulling over so that Cam could watch as well. Too good to miss. Dave Perry just yanks it right out of his hand. I was like, oh, that's too much angle. And it wasn't quite a roller. It wasn't a good enough air shot. It just way overturned, went out of bounds. Still got a fair chunk of the fairway bitten off, but a very, very, very tough upshot to save his par, which would be so important because Gilbert essentially already has the birdie on lock. Dave throws it way too low out of his hand, so he's now at like 25 meters with not a real good shot. Maybe not that quite. I think he might have been in C2. He has a putt. It goes low. A miracle it doesn't go out of bounds. A genuine miracle it doesn't go out of bounds. So he's got a tap in bogey now coming his way. And he's just got to watch Gilbert take two strokes on him and go into the lead on the final hole. But, doink, I do not understand. I don't understand how he missed that putt. There's no way. It was so close. It's so close. He's so good. And he just cages it. Caged it. Tap in par for him. Tap in bogey for Dave. And now we are all square going in to the final hole, hole 18. And Dave has laid it up every single day. Has not gone for it. Gilbert, though, on the other hand, does go for it, as he should. It's not that hard of a hole for someone who can throw very far. And he plays just a little too safe. It's a very skinny OB at the start and more of a fat island at the back. And he lands in it, but bounces over the end and is out by like 2 centimeters, which just would have been a insane relief for Dave. So Dave now lays up into a very safe spot, pitches it over, and Gilbert has to hit from the drop zone to save the par and push it into a playoff. He cannot. Dave walks up, taps in, and one-time champ now, Dave Perry. So Melbourne double for the MPO and FPO, and big monkey off the back for Dave. I would have to imagine he does not have that big win, even though he has been one of Australia's premier disc golfers for quite some time. So I believe Chris said that couldn't happen to a nicer bloke, and I will repeat that sentiment as well. Everyone loves Dave. He's a bit of a quiet achiever. I didn't play that many tourneys this year. I haven't seen him in a social day in what feels like forever, but he's still out there, he's still getting it done, and a huge, huge event for him. National champion, let's go, Dave! We'll have to shout out a couple of the other people from Melbourne. I'm scrolling pretty far, though. I'm looking down the next best of the Melbournians, Ryan Deer, in 18th place with a plus 10, just a cool 26 strokes behind Dave. Yikes! And Leo Dykes in 21st. I think Leo was my troller's guarantee that he would definitely beat Ryan, because I think he had a few strokes on old Rhino. But I guess I was wrong. I had a little bet with Deiros for round two, because we both didn't play very good. And I did notice him way down the bottom of the list and thought it would be just important for me to send him a little word of encouragement. So I sent him a text message just saying, nice round today, mate. and wasn't too well received, but he was confident that he was going to play better tomorrow. So I made a little bet with him about who could improve their score the most in day two. And after eight holes, I had my fourth birdie, and I happened to just run into him and had to let him know that I was on my fourth birdie. May have not mentioned that I was still two over par at the time, but but yeah, then he went on to have a blistering round two, which got him way off the bottom to up towards the middle of it, and then a bit of a lackluster round three again. So, but still, still better than Phil and Leo, who are tied for 21st. But disappointing we couldn't see some of those boys get up more in the thick of it. But yeah. What are you going to do? I won't go on too much longer because I'm sure no one wants to hear me just jabber on their own. But we do have the second weekend of champs coming up now. They're starting tomorrow. I spoke to the old man. He's had his practice rounds in and feeling pretty good. He says it's pretty scorable and quite manageable. And he thinks that it's a course that will suit him. And he's Waka Waka real well. So he's one that we'll be keeping an eye on. Plenty of Melburnians in there as well. MA2 looking pretty thick for it. And I've got my eye down on the bottom though in the MJ15, Joe Paul. Joe Paul is a red hot chance to have the best score of the entire weekend. And yes, any of the other Melburnians, Kaelin especially, I'm having a look at you. That is a direct challenge. But I do think that this MJ15 is a very, very solid chance of having the best score of the weekend. I don't know too much about the course because it is completely different to the one we played. I've had a look at the course map and I looked for some of the key holes that were killing everyone out of vision. So hole 1, hole 6, hole 14, they were taking monster numbers, even hole 17 a bit. And they are nothing the same. So 1 has been broken up into 2 holes for this weekend. 6 doesn't even exist anymore. The hole 14 is, I believe, a shorter version, and they don't have any of the out of bounds on the left. And hole 17, also the same, shorter version, and don't have anything out of bounds on the left. So I'm not expecting to see any huge numbers, some round ruiners like we had in my weekend. So I can see that all these divisions being very tight going into the end. There's no clear standouts for me in any of them. So I'm really excited and we'll be watching very attentively this weekend. Shame we won't have any live coverage, but what are you going to do? We didn't have too much of a spotlight, not lights. I basically just shouted out the crew that I was staying with and the crew that I drove up with. A lot of fun. Had a great weekend despite me throwing out of bounds all the time. Not lights, nah, nothing. You can't be throwing not lights at Nationals. Huge shout out to the park crew. They did a fantastic job. Loved watching all the stuff. Loved watching the coverage. If you haven't seen any of the coverage yet, check out some of the live. And cannot wait until the post-produced stuff comes up. But definitely check out the live. Chuck up the comments so you can see what we're all talking shit about while it was all going on. But yeah, huge shout out to them. Huge shout out to the ADG for making that work. I didn't quite actually have a chance to talk to Chris about this. Maybe I'll bring it up on the next pod. But I can't imagine if the ADG had any metrics on how much money was spent and how much we get back from it. I can't imagine the live coverage would hit any of those metrics. So the numbers when I was looking at them at peak times is about 240 odd people, I believe. But I think something as special as that, and in a sport like ours where we're really just trying to grow the game, I think it's pretty important, and I love that they do it, and I hope that it continues, because yeah, at least for Nationals, it's the pinnacle of our year, and yeah, love to have anyone who wants to watch it watch along. We had people from the US watching from all over the shop as well too. They were chiming in the live chat. So yeah, big shout out to ADG and Park Media for making that happen, and a huge shout out to Kev and Sharon Costa. Did a wonderful job with the event. Everything ran very smoothly. Everything was marked out very clearly. Yeah, just everything you want in a an event. Couldn't complain with the organization. So, well done to all those. Chris, have you got anything else?
Speaking of good blokes, I'll honourable mention myself for a good job at Social Day.
Cool. All right. Thanks for listening. Mm-hmm.